Now is the time for the Yoshi Malaise. And he speak about breaking the code of inclusion, the designing micro materials based on PRIM principles for accessible programming education. Very difficult title. So, okay, the stage is yours.
Thank you. Thank you. So, my name is Yoshi. My name is Yoshi. I'm a PhD student at the Vrije Universiteit Brussel. And today I'll be giving a talk about how we can design more open. Sorry for that.
Okay.
Test. All right. So I'm Yoshi, and I'll be giving a talk about how we can design more open and inclusive pedagogical material to teach programming. I'll first like to start a bit with a small introduction to tell you why we think this talk is important. So I've always been passionate both by programming, but also by education. I joined CorelDojo from a very young age, helping kids to learn how to code. And I also went for an internship abroad in Kenya to build software for schools in less fortunate areas, where I could firsthand experience what technology can do to help education. Upon graduating, I joined Hack Your Future Belgium. For those of you that don't know, it's a small non-profit organization in Brussels that organizes coding boot camps for refugees that are trying to find a job in the tech sector here. So, before we go on to the meat of the presentation, let's take a look at some of the background information we need. I'm pretty sure most of you remember your first programming classes where you had to install a weird-looking editor with hundreds of buttons. You had to type in some text, you try to press the play button or a compile button, and you would see a weird error message that you didn't really understand. This can be very demotivating. And it's actually even worse when it happens to people from already underrepresented groups, because if they encounter these types of errors, they internalize it, and they feel like it's a confirmation that, yes, maybe they do not belong in such a classroom, which is, of course, not the message you want to send. Now, in the past years, there has been a new methodology of teaching programming that tries to limit this issue, and it's based called the PRIM principles. Now, the idea is, instead of starting to write your programs from scratch, from day one, you basically start with a simple exercise, predict. In this stage, you look at some existing code, you download it, and you're going to try to predict what will the result be if I run this piece of code. Then, in the next stage, you're actually going to download the code and execute it, and going to verify, wow, were your predictions correct or not. Then in the third stage, we're going to ask you to actually make exercises on the problem. This can be label all the variables, or can you tell me which variables are updated at some point in the code? Now, up until this point, the learner hasn't changed anything about the code itself, and as such, he also doesn't feel like it's a personal failure if something goes wrong in the process. We're going to try to change this in the fourth step, modify, where we're still not going to ask the student to write code from scratch, but we're going to give them a functioning program, and we're going to ask them like, hey, can you make some small modifications? Like instead of running this loop 3 times, run it 6 times. And it's only in the last stage where we're going to ask them to actually write a new program from scratch using the same principles he developed earlier. Now, this is a new methodology in teaching, in programming education, but it's based on a very well-known pedagogical concept called the zone of proximal development, where the idea is quite simple. If you're only doing tasks you can do by yourself, you're not actually learning anything, you're just repeating stuff. But if I give you a task that you cannot do yourself, even with some help, you're actually just going to get demotivated and lose all motivation to continue learning. So that's also not good. So we should always strive to give exercises in this yellow zone where the student cannot easily do it on their own, but with some proper guidance, they can get there. Which brings us to micromaterials. Now, a micromaterial is an open education resource, so anybody can easily include it in their curriculum, but it should also provide some sort of automated feedback so that even though the teacher is not there directly to guide the student, they can still get something away from it. Ideally, you also want some kind of automatically generated content, because managing all the content for exercises can be a very time-consuming exercise for teachers. So now we'll discuss some small examples that we within our lab have built to experiment with these ideas. So the first sample we'd like to discuss is an online environment to practice the use of HTML. It's designed for our engineering students, who we do not really expect to be able to develop HTML websites on their own, but they should be able to grasp the core concepts of what the elements are about. So we have a stepwise progress that they can follow level by level, and we always start with a small presentation of the core HTML concepts that they need to know. Now, once it's time to actually practice their HTML, we do not just give them an editor, but instead we make use of Google's Blockly library to show this kind of HTML blocks that already contain the syntax, so they can focus on what the text represents and not on the syntax itself. Important here, we analyze sample HTML code to generate the blocks, so adding new levels is as simple as providing a new website we want them to recreate. We also dynamically create links for every element, like hints for every element that they will need to use in the page. We have a similar environment for the practice of databases for the same engineering students. We used to have a lot of problems where they had to install databases locally, database files could get corrupt, and they could turn into issues. So we developed a fully online environment with the use of SQL.js, which is an open source project based on SQLite compiled to WebAssembly using Unscriptum. So in this simple application, they would get to see a description of a database. And on this database, they would get to run queries. The queries would be typed in into an online code editor based on Atom. So they get syntax highlighting, they get code completion. And whenever they were to execute the queries, they could see the results directly in their browsers. And this they would use to answer questions about the data. Similarly, if it was more about inserting or updating the data, we could no longer do with simply having a simple fill in the answer type of question. So instead, we're going to run checks to see at which step did they fail, so they can stepwise go back and modify the code until they get it right for all the constraints. Similarly as well, if they want to create new tickets, we would also generate test cases for those. Another problem that's very often looked at is, can the students interpret code? And a common tool for this are trace tables. Now, for those of you that don't know, a trace table is just a way, for example, here, where you can loop through your program line by line and note down what happens at each line. For example, this trace table is designed to look at which variables are declared or initialized or updated at certain moments in time. A different type of trace tables would be the operators trace table, which gives the student a view of which operators are used at which points in the program. A third one would be this variable values, which is basically a way to see which variables are updated at which point in time, which is a way that we can know, is the student actually reasoning about his code correctly? Lastly, we have a very basic trace table for advanced users where they can just keep track of the latest state of their program. Now, to this trace table application, we added some export functionalities so teachers could import the JSON from the student so we could run some diagnostics to see if students were understanding the code correctly. Then we had more of a social game, a coding card conundrum. It's basically a kind of card game where there are three types of cards. We have goal cards that assign a certain condition that needs to be true. We have environment cards that initialize five variables. And we have code cards that would execute some code to update the global state of the program. So it's a multiplayer game. It can be played from 1 to 4 people. And we get this field where each player gets a handful of cards, and there will be three heaps in the center. Now, during their turn, students could select a card from their hand and place it on one of the environments. When doing so, they would have to update the state table to reflect the new latest state after executing the code on their card. And if they managed to achieve the goal on their goal card, they would get awarded some points for it. So it's a social game where they can still practice their trace tables. Then the final one we're going to discuss is King Scroll. In here, we tried to make it a bit more silly. We added like a fantasy theme, where the idea was that we live in a kingdom, but the kingdom is going to be attacked by an evil dragon. And it's up to us to find out which of the heroes will be able to stop the dragon. Now, there are 16 heroes randomly generated based on 4 essential variables of the equipment they are wearing, and 2 extra variables to increase the inclusiveness of our application. Students will be shown a scroll that will be randomly generated based on essential JavaScript features that would update the state of those 4 variables. And it's up to the students to predict after the program has run which of the heroes matches the final description. Students were able to automatically select which elements of JavaScript they know or didn't know. So they could always participate even though they hadn't seen everything. And we gave them a state table to, of course, keep track of the state changes as they went through the scroll. So those were some of the examples that we developed. But now we'd like to take a step back and look at what did we learn from it and what kind of guidelines can we give you if you were to try to implement something on your own. So the first piece of advice we would like to give you is embrace the themes. I know it might look silly at first, but just having a silly theme takes a lot of the stress away from students, and they no longer feel like they can fail doing an exercise because they're just playing a game in this kind of theme world. But when we want to design those themes, we also shouldn't forget the principle of skill transfer, which basically states that the context in which you learn something becomes an important part of how you will be able to apply those skills in different contexts. So the closer your environment is to a realistic use case, the more useful their skills will directly be when they need to apply them to a realistic environment. So it's still good that in your silly theme world, there is a real life kind of application. Also, definitely invite a social aspect. One of the main reasons people stop learning how to code is because they don't really feel like they belong in the world or they feel discouraged. And just having this kind of social aspect, it can be slightly competitive but also collaborative, really takes away this barrier and pushes people to continue learning in a welcoming environment. Also, you should strive to keep the setup minimal as possible. And I know this sounds really straightforward, but when you're designing an application that needs to be installed on a desktop and even 2 out of 20 students are facing issues, that takes away at least 5 minutes of the teacher's time that they cannot be helping students. So if at all possible, try to make it work just within the browser. Now, we should also make sure that our micromaterials only focus on one specific learning goal. A lot of content is created, like for example, the Heidi programming language, on which there is a great talk tomorrow. And these are all like great tools, but they kind of expect you to focus on them for your whole semester. A lot of teachers already have a curriculum they need to follow, so they do not have the flexibility to really go with something else. Your tool should really be something they can introduce and use in 1 or 2 of their lessons without needing to change their overall curriculum. Otherwise, it will just not be adapted. We also have the expertise reversal principle. Now, the idea here is if you're new to something, you really like to be guided and get a lot of hints on what can I do, what shouldn't I do. But as you gain more experience, if you keep having to go through the same guidance, it actually becomes a hindrance. So ideally, your application should be designed in such a way that they contain multiple layers, where first at the outer layer, there is a lot of help available for your students. But as they move on and become more experienced and become more experts, they can take away those layers and start operating the tool without getting all that extra help that's getting in the way of learning. Then also, of course, try to do something with automatic content generation. Whenever you try to develop a tool on your own, you'll quickly discover that having to update the content yourself or even asking teachers to create the content themselves, it takes a very long time and they will not do it. Our idea is to make it easier for teachers to use those tools, not to give them more work. So the final principle is, if at all possible, try to make things mobile compatible, especially with the adults I've been teaching. They have very busy work lives. They're trying to learn programming while still taking care of their families. If they have a simple tool they can use, for example, while on public transport, that's a huge quality of life improvement for them. So let me finish this presentation by telling you all, like, I know you're all a community of builders. If you think like, hey, these kind of tools you discussed, I can build those, feel free to reach out to any learning environment close to you and try to ask how you can contribute. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.